Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Maureen Belote. And yes, I am related to your Jenna. Technically, I guess she's my niece because my husband, Gene, is her husband's uncle. So that makes us related. And when I called, I know somebody was confused that there was a Belote and it wasn't Jenna. I want to thank you, Mother Susan, for inviting me. This is my first visit to this beautiful church. A preacher's five-year-old daughter noticed that her father was always paused and bowed his head moment before he started the sermon. Well, one day she asked him why. Well, honey, he explained, he wanted to say a prayer to help to the Lord to help him preach a good sermon. I'm asking him to help. Little girl looked at him and she says, "How come he doesn't answer it?" I hope he answers my prayer that I might reach you today with the message of how we, through Episcopal Relief and Development, give hope and healing through our disaster relief program. But first I must mention the name is Episcopal, that's us, right? Relief, which is what I'm going to talk about, and Development, which ties into the gospel today, because God wants no lost sheep. And that's what we do in the development area of our work, which is about half of the budget. About the other half, though, is disaster relief. And the Lord changed his mind about the disaster he planned to bring his people. Jeremiah paints pictures of disaster. The quaking mountains and fruitful land now a desert, cities laying in ruins. We've seen such things. And we can easily picture them in our mind. I'm sorry your choir is behind me. I'll try and remember once in a while to turn around. You're used to No, I'm not ignoring you. My first Florida hurricane experience was somewhat removed. It was with Hurricane Andrew. We moved here in 1992. And I was taking my son over to bowling, and a huge corrugated cardboard box that had been flattened went right across the top of my car. I had not realized that a hurricane over on the East Coast could create tornadoes that reach the West Coast. Of course, since then, I've seen many blue tarps, debris, roads closed. In 2004, Charlie was the first one that has really impacted us. The brutal winds and the torrential rains, power outages, trees uprooted, and I still needed to walk the dog. But this was nothing compared to what happened in New York City, Washington, D.C., and Pennsylvania 15 years ago today. It was the disaster of the largest magnitude in the United States. 19 militant terrorists, 4 airplanes, over 3,000 people killed, and countless numbers of lives forever affected. Our youngest generation, those who are 15 to 20, have no personal recollection of what happened. But I bet every single one of you knows where you were when you heard the tragedy. And as it unfolded, I know originally I was standing in front of a Weight Watchers group. That was what I was doing. And we had heard that that a plane hit a World Trade Center, one of the buildings. And as the day unfolded, it became worse and worse. What do we do? My husband at that time was on a mission trip in the Dominican Republic. My mother lived nearby. The uncertainty. We knew people in New York. We had just moved here from New Jersey. And, of course, our church's home is at 815, not all that far from the tragedy. Were we at war? What would it mean? What would we do? It was scary stuff, as are all of the disasters. The news filled every day with natural disasters. Most recently, our brothers and sisters are suffering in Louisiana with floods, and even closer to home with not the magnitude, but still flooding. Disasters, they're more than broken things. They can create broken lives. But with God, they can also renew faith. Because for every tragic story, there are hundreds, maybe thousands, of stories of compassionate people who respond. I have a friend who lives where she saw the trade center. She lives in the village and tells stories about the compassion of the people, the children in the middle school making lunches, the churches opening, and Fran McKendry singing, just because you can only be absorbed so much in the tragedies. These things, these little glimmers of hope. It's frustrating to watch our brothers and sisters in fear and pain. Now, I know you've all been waiting to see what the heck does this lady do. Okay, this represents disaster, and I've stuck a couple of disaster things like floods and fires and droughts and famines and wars and so on and so forth on it. When disaster strikes, we all don't know exactly. Oh, that's not going to be a good idea. No, it won't be. Oh, my goodness. Let's see. Let's put it in the... How about if I put it... I'll take them off. I promise. Okay. And I averted one, because that's the fourth phase, when you try to avert and make things a little bit better. We hear about them. When they're close to us, they impact us in different ways. But if you've ever been as part of one, you know your heart goes out, and you wonder, what can I do? It's kind of like the little boy throwing the starfish back into the ocean. And a man said, well, what are you doing? He says, this starfish will die if I don't. He says, but there's hundreds of them here. You'll never get them all. He says, no, but it makes a difference to this one. And he threw another one in. Episcopal Relief and Development's Disaster Relief Program is composed of three phases. And first of all, we all know the first responders, those who know what to do. We don't. We can pray. That's our first response. But these are usually government agencies, firemen, policemen, EMTs, and so on. The immediate needs are met, and this might take about 2 weeks or so. Makeshift centers are set up for food, rest, medical, and victims, if there are any. They do a kind of what is known as asset mapping. What's happened, what do we need, and what can we get, and let's put it together. The second phase, relief. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot my balloons. Jeez, first, I've already gone one, and here's number two. Okay, number two is the second phase. This is when the local church is where people go for the relief. They look for assistance and shelter. Depending on the scale of the disaster, the diocese and their ministries are reaching out to those who need assistance and assessing what needs to be done. They are then in coordination with any number of organizations, such as Episcopal Relief and Development, securing the resources for the long-term recovery phase. This relief phase typically lasts a few months. And I must tell you that I know Episcopal Relief and Development, when they know there's a hurricane coming into our diocese, immediately calls the bishop and said, here's your hotline. Here's what, if you need us, let us know. And an initial donation of money may often be given at that time, with more as it's needed, if so. This lasts usually a few months. Now, if you are not involved living in the area, the best thing you can do is send money. I don't know if you remember in Hurricane Andrew, there were tons of clothing and food rotting, and the people in there are already in a disaster. You want to take them away from something else to provide a place to receive them and distribute them. It's difficult. You sometimes are actually adding to their burdens. When you send money to an organization that's reliable, like Episcopal Relief and Development, it will be used, and it helps the community to get back on its feet. If let's say Tampa was hit, and in Clearwater we were okay, well, isn't it better to get a store in Clearwater to help the people in Tampa? You want to help those communities regrow and get back on their feet. You can be assured that your money will be used as it is directed. We have availability of all our financials, The bishops are in close contact with Episcopal Leaf and Development, and they, through their clergy, will know what is needed and can ascertain whether it's valid and how to help and get the networking go. The third phase, which is recovery, this is the one that lasts the longest. This is an emphasis that shifts to restoring services, repairing houses and buildings, returning individuals to self-sufficiency, and rebuilding communities. The challenge of the recovery phase is that most of the television cameras have moved on to the next disaster or story du jour. And yet the people are still reeling. They still need homes. They still need so many things, counseling and such. It's a chronic state, not a crisis. But this is the phase that the church excels in because we are part of the communities that have been impacted. I don't think there's a community that doesn't have Episcopalians within a 20-mile radius. And in fact, in the world, because of our Anglican connections, we have connections everywhere. We are in the best position to identify and the needs of the community. Effective response requires us to discern what's most helpful and appropriate at any given time, and to continue to hold those directly impacted in our hearts through their recovery long after the media image fades. I know I had the opportunity, some of you may have also, to go to Katrina and help rebuild houses. I was so impressed with Katie Mears, who now is our director for disaster relief, was working on a house, and she was telling us that the government comes in and they paint everything white. This is it. You get it. She says, it doesn't cost more to get a couple of cans of paint that are different colors. We can't make it all right, but we can make it a little better. And the house that she was working on, it was for a grandmother and granddaughter. And the little girl wanted her room purple. I mean, this is New Orleans, you know. So, but if that's what they decided on, it would have been a purple room. And I looked around and I saw this was one of the very few houses in a vast neighborhood that was actually going to be able to be lived in. It takes such a long time. There may become an opportunity to help in Louisiana that remains to be seen, but there is a way that you can sign up if you have a skill, perhaps building electrical or whatever, that you can help in certain disasters, not all the time. We know our community. We know the people fall through the cracks. After Hurricane Charlie, Father Scotto told me that there was a family who lost their mobile home, and they were able to secure a second one, and then, I don't know if it was Ivan or Jean, but one of them did extensive damage to the second one. But the insurance company, after paying the first one, canceled their policy. Now, these are individual. Governments are big. They can't always know what we as individuals need. Sometimes it's trauma counseling or job retraining. There are myriads and myriads of personal stories. It can easily last 5 years or longer, long after those cameras have moved on. Finally, and I'm sorry, I haven't done as good a job as I wanted to do. You know, in my mind's eye, I had this all set out really nice. This was number three.
Number four, if you will, and I want you to think of this as a circle. You started the disaster, and I didn't leave enough room, again, planning ahead. You move through the stages, and then when things are somewhat normalized, or as normal as their new normal is,
you think ahead. Now, what's going to happen? How many of you got hurricane windows after 2004? How many of you thought ahead to the next time? You don't want to have to do this again. So it involves planning. And the reason there's ABC on there, it stands for asset-based community. Yeah, asset-based community development. I forgot the D. I don't do well in mornings. Come see me in an evening. But, you know, these are who has what. I know my own neighborhood. We had a meeting, and who has a generator, and who has this, and who has that, so that we as a community, our little community, could help. And then there's the larger community and the church community, and then your city and your government and your town. So that's how it grows. It's a long, think of it as a star just reaching outward. Now, I can't leave without suggesting and asking that if it's in your heart to help Episcopal Relief and Development to do its good work, we've been doing this for over 75 years under a couple of different names. But there are envelopes in the back. And I've also, the new ones of these are going to be coming out. These are the gifts for life. And you can look for them. I'll tell you, every year we give gifts in the name of each of our grandchildren at Christmas time. When somebody had a 50th anniversary, I gave a gift for life. Because let's face it, when you've been married 50 years, how many more tchotchkes do you need? So I said, no, I'll make a difference to somebody's life. That person, we will never know who it is. We won't get a thank you note. But we will get that good feeling to know that we are doing the Lord's work. And I thank you for your patience and your understanding. And I'll take my balloons and put them away. Thank you again so much.